and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. Now, this week our guest is Arizona congressional candidate Joanna Mendoza. A lot to tell you about her. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. Now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but please don't forget to tell us where you're from. You also can get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Quince, Miracle Made, and Trust in Will, and our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors because it really helps make this podcast happen. James, my optimism about the midterms remains high, and there was more good news than bad this week, but there were some setbacks. In Indiana, Trump, with massive spending, defeated 5 of the 7 Indiana state senators who refused to follow his order on gerrymandering congressional districts. The hope was if 4 or 5 of those survive, it would send a message to other Republicans. That didn't happen. I must say I am increasingly worried about the Michigan Senate race. Mallory McMurrow was the strongest candidate, I thought. CNN found all emails where she seemed to prefer California to the Midwest. Not exactly a good credential if you're running in Michigan. She might be able to come back. The establishment is moving more and more to Congressman Haley Stevens, who just isn't a very good candidate. And my great worry is that this left-wing, left-winger, El Saeed, will get the nomination and he can't win. So that's a worry. And finally, the Republican Supreme Court, went further and not only gutted the Voting Rights Act, but they really expedited the ability of some southern states, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Alabama, to move to knock out black lawmakers this year and pick up an extra 3 or 4 seats. So all that, I think, was troubling. The good news, Trump changes his pitch daily, sometimes hourly, on what to do about this reckless decision to go to war in Iran. He has no idea what to do. I think he also said affordability is bullshit or a hoax. Tell that to some Ohio worker paying almost $5 for gas, or to Latinos in South Texas losing their health insurance. And I talked to Barney Frank this week, who said he said Trump had one good thing going for him. He knew how to play to anger. He knew how to play to grievance. But he was a one-trick pony, and guess what? That's gone. And I think that's right. And I guess the polls just get worse and worse. But my final bit of good news, as you know, a special Senate election in Michigan, Democrats once again outperformed. So more good than bad, a few setbacks, but I think the basic bottom line hasn't changed much.
Well, I will take your bad news, actually, the worst news, Supreme Court. And we just live under a adjunct of the Republican National Committee. I mean, it's evidenced by the fact that they stick this ruling out in late April of an election year. They were in such a hurry to help Republican candidates, they just couldn't help themselves. That's genuinely mm-hmm. bad news. The race in Indiana is, I don't think it's bad. I mean, that's a Republican problem. And by the way, even the people who bucked Trump got a significant number of votes. Trump, you understand, needs 90% plus of Republicans. And right now he's down to 80. We don't need a lot because mm-hmm. the Democrats are, 95% of what they are. Your concerns about Michigan are totally legitimate. It is not very difficult to see this go in a less than stellar direction. I would point out that a special in the state Senate last night in Michigan, just blew the hinges off expected performance. It won by 20 right. points.
Yeah.
So, but I certainly share your concerns about the Supreme Court. I certainly am worried about Michigan, I don't think the Indiana Republican primaries indicate much other than Trump has a hold on a large part of the Republican Party, but an insufficient hold not to cause grief. I actually think this thing came out perfectly. Because if you're thinking about breaking with Trump for the general election, this will scare the hell out of you. But you can't win unless you break with it, partially. So I think Indiana, I wouldn't call it good news or bad news. I think call it more the same.
Well, the reason I said it was a bit of a setback, because the hope was if most of those seven who he was campaigning, spending lots of money, sending all of his henchmen, and if they had survived, I think it would have sent a message to other Republicans that it might have created some fissures. It may be that you don't want those fissures, James. It may be we want this to be a total Trump party.
That's a good question. I'm kind of torn. You know, come Labor Day, a Republican candidate is, you know, do they totally embrace Trump or do they try to get some distance? I think your choice is to burn in the ship or the freezing sea, but it's going to be fun to watch them have to make that decision. And the polling, too, we must note, continues to deteriorate. David Shore had to redo his chart because it ran out of space for how low he had gone. So, the Michigan stuff is a little scary. The California stuff is not as scary. Some of the stuff is just really good. But Michigan
I didn't watch the California debate. I was in an event in New York with my wife last night. I read about it this morning. I frankly think a Democrat is more likely than not to be the next governor of California. Doesn't matter a whole lot. This is not a novel thought of mine. I've been picking up from a lot of other people. It looks like, what's his name? The former Attorney General and HHS Secretary, Shabera. It looks like he's the Joe Biden of California. He's the remainder man. You know, that's Swalwell, Dopped out. Katie Porter's kind of obnoxious. Steyer is, not a leader. So I don't know. I would bet that at least one Democrat will be in that runoff and they'll win, and they probably won't be a very memorable governor, but that's not bad news.
It's highly qualified. I don't know. I mean, I shouldn't say. The guy that I know people like, I people say doesn't have a chance, is the guy's the mayor of San Jose, but
is the guy what, from San Jose?
San Jose, and his name escaped.
He sounds impressive, right. But the whole Silicon billionaires are rallying around him. That gives me some pause.
People say he's impressive.
I would tell everyone. If you want to find out about the Silicon Valley billionaires who've turned right wing for Trump for one reason only, money, 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 greed, read the wonderful piece George Packer has in the current Atlantic on David Sacks and who these people are, what they want. And boy, I'll tell you, they want an oligarchy to run America.
Yeah. One thing, going back to the Indiana point, there's a huge election coming up along the same lines, and that's the special, and I think it's Kentucky 3, the Thomas Massey seat. If Massey survives,
right. It's a primary. It's a
Republican
primary,
James. The most prominent critic on the Republican side. And they're putting a lot of money. I think that would, if Massey were to win, and I don't know, and I haven't seen any really reliable polling, but that would be a bigger blow than if some of the Indiana Republican state senators lost.
Oh, that would be a huge blow because he hates Massey. Right. Massey gives him all kinds of problems.
Everything in there, and it's Kentucky, and it's actually a congressional seat. So that's on the watch list. That one has got to be, high.
It does. You know, the Iran stuff is incredible. I mean, this, you talk about the gang that can't shoot straight. I'm obviously not talking about the military. Different story by different people on different days. And there's this very simple explanation. Why did Trump go in when he had said he didn't believe in foreign wars? He said he didn't believe in foreign wars because he wanted to campaign against the Democrats. They wanted to claim that they were the advocates of foreign wars. Actually, it was George Bush that went into Iran and Afghanistan. But be it as it may, he's situational. And then what happens? He goes to Venezuela, it's a piece of cake. And he goes and he bombs Iran last June, and, you know, no real recriminations. So he thinks, hey, read the Ashley Parker piece in The Atlantic, where Trump now says he's gone beyond Washington and Lincoln, James. He now sees himself as Julius Caesar or Alexander the Great or Napoleon Bonaparte. So he says, hey, I'm Alexander the Great. I can go in and I can take care of it in a couple of days. Well, he hasn't. And it's a war that is going to be costly. We're losing people. We're going to suffer economically. And I think America's standing in the world. The great war for China and maybe for Russia.
Well, illusions of grandeur are a sign of slipping relevance and cognitive. You know, when people, as they're going down, yeah. Which he is going down. He's going really down in November. And he's going to get in. To the extent you think he can't get any crazier, let me assure you, he can get crazier. And this is but one example. Now, what he may try to do, start another goddamn war. We don't know, but I'm out here on the West Coast raising money, and people are so mortified about what he's going to, you know, we talk about all the time, what he's going to pull off between now and Election Day. And you got to worry about what he's going to do in a foreign policy arena between now and Election Day, because this swift and impending doom is coming. I mean, he's got to know that. Yeah. They can't protect him enough. And you can feel it. It's not just that the polling is bad. You can feel it. I mean, you walk around and you can just see the anger, and the anger coming from people that you would never expect. You would look at them and you would think they were Republicans. I mean, I saw it at the Kentucky Derby. It's more integrated than you think, but I sat in fifth floor and it was all full of people. I was surprised. And one more thing is Jimmy Williams, whose dad was a friend of mine, who's the head of the Philadelphia Painters, is now his son Jimmy, is the head of the International Painters Union. And he sat with me at the Derby. His dad's an old friend of mine, and he said their members, most of them did vote for Trump, and they got real buyer's remorse now, which I think is a good sign. I mean, now we know that young people have real buyer's remorse. Yep. We know that there's real buyer's remorse among Hispanics, and apparently among blue-collar people is pretty substantial.
Well, I took a round trip last night and this morning, Excella, Washington, New York, and I'll bet you I had, I don't know, as many as a half dozen people just walking down the aisle, getting off, getting on, stop by a seat saying, hey, when are we going to get rid of this guy? And two of them volunteered that they had voted for him. So I think it's the same thing we're seeing.
It's not like we're not humans. We travel, you go to New York, you go to Los Angeles, you go to an airport, a train station. You can feel the 34%. That's my point. You just it's just going to get worse and worse. But the anecdotal evidence, to the extent it matters, you're on a train, is a good example of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, you know, you take the Excella train, the Kentucky Derby. We've covered the range, James.
Man. I mean, we covered a lot. You sure did. Upgrade your style with Quince. The low price you can see, the quality you can feel. Well, I think you can look at it and you can see that it's affordable. All right, that's going to glare you. What you've got to feel is the quality of this. This stuff is made very well. It's durable, it's stylish, and you can see how affordable it is.
Yeah. You know, we've really been more intentional about what we wear day to day, leaning into pieces that feel easy, comfortable, and still put together. It just makes getting dressed simpler, which is a time saver. We can all appreciate it's one of the many reasons Quince is a go-to. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are clean, and everything just works without needing to overthink it. Quince has all the wardrobe staples for spring. You just imagine how good you'll look in 100% European linen shorts and shirts from $34. I didn't misread that. It's from $34. They're lightweight, breathable, and comfortable. They're 100% cotton tees. They have the same softness that has to be felt. Their pants also hit the same balance. They're relaxed and comfortable, but still polished enough to wear pretty much anywhere. Best of all, everything is priced 50 to 80% less than what you'd find at similar brands. That's because you're asking why, Quince works directly with ethical factories and cuts out the middleman. So you're getting premium materials without the markup. Everything is designed to last and making getting dressed easier. The fits are perfect, the fabrics are incredible, and the style and options are unmatched. You should see James. You should see how great he looks in their activewear when he's running around on his farm. And one of my Quince favorites is their luxurious stretch wool dress pant. You know, they really feel amazing. They are perfect for business on the hill, meeting a source, or reading on a recliner. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/war room for free shipping on your order and a 365-day returns. We have some good news. Quince is now available in Canada also. That's quince.com/war room for free shipping and 365-day returns. Again, quince.com/war room. The link is in our show notes. Hey, James, our guest is Joanne Mendoza, the Democratic candidate in Arizona's 6th Congressional District against Republican incumbent Juan Ciscomani. And it's one of the most competitive House races this year. She was raised in rural poverty. She's a single mother. She spent 20 years in the Navy and Marine Corps. She's one of what the DCCC calls their Hellcats candidate this year, veterans everywhere. She would be the first woman Marine elected to the United States House if she wins. Now, James, I don't want you to have any flashbacks, okay? So just, you know, be okay, be comfortable. But she was a Marine drill sergeant.
Drill instructor, Al.
Still instructor, so don't mess with Joanne, James.
No. Just a note, Joanne, just to tell her, the women drill instructors go through exactly the same thing as a man. The women go through exactly the same training as a man.
Yes.
Then people have to, and they don't call, when they went to the then commandant way back, he said, look, they call women are only waves. They call them in the Navy waves and the Air Force of wax or whatever. And he says, what do we call them? He says, we'll call them Marines. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a special, Marines do not separate the way they designate females and males. They're all Marines, which
that's
I think
is absolutely correct, James. Yes.
Yeah.
Point it out. Okay,
okay.
Here we go.
Nomenclature. Ms. Mendoza, first of all, thank you for being on the show.
Please call me Joe. Call me Joe. Or Gunny, whatever. I mean,
I that's good. My wife will criticize me for this, but here we go. Joe,
yes.
You have criticized Donald Trump on the Iran war. What mm-hmm. should he do right now?
Oh my God, what he should have done was he should have conferred with Congress about what's happening in Iran. I mean, you know, we've known for a really long time that Iran has been working towards building nuclear weapons and we've kept an eye on them. But if there was intelligence that was showing an imminent threat, he really should have gone to Congress so that Congress could approve the conflict. And so right now, I think what's most egregious is that, you know, we're putting our sons and daughters in harm's way. And I say that because as a drill instructor, every single Marine that I made and every troop that I led, whether it was here in the United States or forward deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan, they were like my children. I mean, you take care of them, you train them hard so that when they do have to face you know, that a difficult situation or the enemy, that they're ready to do so. And I think it's just egregious that there is no plan or strategy. It hasn't been approved by Congress, and it certainly hasn't been approved by the American people.
Well, I agree. A massive miscalculation not going to Congress, not enlisting allies. It was really reckless. But how about if tomorrow he says, you know what? We got rid of the Ayatollah and others. Their Navy and Air Force have been basically dismantled. They're an economic basket case. We declare victory. It's over.
Well, I mean, I just don't see that happening. I think it's wishful thinking. I mean, look, it's very difficult to, once troops are on the ground, once our troops are committed, it's very difficult to just pull out of the situation. I mean, not to criticize the Biden administration, but we saw what happened in Afghanistan, right? And so we certainly don't want that, and we don't want to put any more of our service members in harm's way. I will tell you, this district here that I'm running for, AZ06, has a couple of military bases, about 80,000 veterans. This is a top priority for voters in this district. We have parents. I've spoken to parents whose kids have either already deployed or are pending orders, and they're pissed, and rightfully so. You know, if we're going to commit troops, we need to make sure that we've exhausted all other options. That includes diplomacy, negotiations, before we commit to putting troops on the ground.
And Joe, how do people in Tucson feel about gas prices today? And if they come down by the fall, will that take away the issue?
No, it won't. I mean, look, right now people are experiencing, not just here in this district, but across the nation, the cost of living is unbearable. You go to the grocery store, prices are high. You know, you go to the gas station, prices are high. There's not enough jobs here that offer good paying jobs that offer benefits. And so people are really feeling the squeeze. And I will tell you, so Tucson is a portion, east side of Tucson is a portion of the district, but we have a lot of rural communities. I live in a rural community, was born and raised in one, raising my kid in one. And people out here are getting penalized even more so because they have to drive into town to get groceries or go to the doctor. And so it's unbearable. And you know what? It's not just this Trump, but it's his little cronies like Representative Juan Sistemani who aren't standing up to him. I mean, the guy is spineless, Al.
How much are you paying for gas now? You know, have you checked the last?
It's close to $5, and it really depends. Close to me in Marana, which is the next town over, it's about $4.58.
Wow.
And I drive a truck. And one of the reasons why I drive a truck is because I live in a rural community. The roads out here aren't great. But I mean, that's even... You know, it's even more expensive. So it's definitely, you know, even if the situation in Iran comes to a conclusion or negotiation, I mean, we're not going to see those prices drop right away. It's going to be a while.
Joe, one more, healthcare. How do you frame that issue? And what are the views in Tucson and those rural communities about Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, healthcare is also cost of living, healthcare, and down here, the border as well, are all top issues for voters, for people in the district. But healthcare right now, our rural hospitals are at risk of losing certain services like maternity care. You know, someone's going to have to drive, you know, an hour and a half into the city to get maternity care. I mean, the maternal rates are already through the roof. Services are at risk of shutting down. And, you know, there's no relief in sight for people. I mean, the one big beautiful bill, which we're calling the big billionaire bill, because it doesn't benefit us, it benefits billionaires. They have, they have cut and implemented challenges to accessing these programs like Medicaid. Here in Arizona, we call it Access. And I would tell you, I am an Access kid. I grew up on Medicaid because my parents worked really hard and couldn't make ends meet. And we found ourselves on those programs. And I wouldn't have grown up strong enough to join the military had it not been for Access.
James Carville.
So how many Greek meet and greet town hall events have you had where you stand in front of voters and say, ask me whatever you want? How many have you had, say, in the last month?
We've done about three or four to include round tables. We just did one We did a couple. We did a veterans roundtable down in Sierra Vista where Fort Huachuca is. Talked to veterans about the concerns there. And, you know, there's a veteran in that community who needs to get chemotherapy for cancer and can't find a ride to the VA. We did another one last week on gun violence prevention. You know, as a drill instructor, I taught marksmanship too. I know how to fire an M16 and a pistol and some other weapon systems. But the gun violence is really just outrageous. And in this district, James, I don't know if you knew this, but Gabby Giffords represented a version of this district many years ago. So this is a very important issue. But yeah, we've done about a handful of roundtables, town halls, if not more. And Sistemani has done zero. And he's been in Congress for 4 years.
What's that? Your opponent did. Can you repeat that? I didn't hear it. I'm hard of hearing them all.
Oh, yeah.
How many has your opponent done?
Sistemani has done zero town hall. Zero.
So that would be none.
None.
James is a math major, yeah.
So what, zero, not plus art equals zero.
It's just zero.
So when you talk to voters and you interact with them, what is the most often heard observation or question that you hear?
Gosh, I'd have to say it's the cost of living. And, you know, when is the relief coming? It's so sad. I mean, I grew up in extreme rural poverty. I know what that feels like. As a parent, I can't imagine right now parents are having to make decisions on whether or not they're going to pay rent or put food on the table for their kids. And I mean, that is the number one issue that we're hearing is that folks cannot survive. And, you know, growing up, I used to feel embarrassed of being poor. And now I realize that shame shouldn't have been on me. That's a failure of government. That is a failure of our elected officials who have not done enough to make sure that in this country that is known for the American dream, that people cannot achieve or have the opportunity to achieve their version, let alone survive.
Wow. So when we do the outrage, I'll have some specific advice about language. But one thing I'm going to talk about in outrage, I want to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes little things explain a lot bigger things. The $1 billion for the ballroom is just a great. So you have a veteran that can't get chemotherapy treatment. And we spend $1 billion on a ballroom, yet we letting this retired E6 die in front of us. This is the wrong part, is it? You know, it used to be the $700 hammer in the Defense Department. Or Reagan would make up stuff. Most of it was not true about people on welfare buying Chambers Regal or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true that they want to spend $1 billion on a ballroom and are cutting veterans in a way that we never imagined.
Yeah.
If the point is that the simpler the better. So because you represent a border district,
mm-hmm.
and you live it and lived it your whole life. How is Trump's immigration policy being ineffective on the border? And what do you would like to see to have a more effective immigration policy in this country?
Yeah, well, I mean, we know we've seen ICE and their operations, like we saw in Minneapolis. Here, there have been a couple of ICE raids. And people are really concerned. I mean, the whole reasoning for additional funding for ICE was to catch these criminals and send them packing. And we're not seeing that. This administration, ICE agents are rounding up veterans. They're rounding up teachers. They're rounding up moms. They're rounding up people who have been pillars in the community. And so what we're seeing right now, especially in the Hispanic community, this district's about 25% Hispanic, is that they're like, this is not what we want. And I will tell you, James, as someone who, I mean, I'm a brown woman. I drive a big old truck. I take my kid to school. I think about that every day. If I'm going to get detained, I'm going to get pulled over and detained and put into in a detention center. And I'm a single mom. Who's going to watch my kid? So these are real concerns. And we don't feel any safer than we did before. We do need to secure the border, but we need to do it smartly with technology, with innovation. And may I add, rebuilding our relationship with Mexico, because Trump has he has destroyed our partnership with them, especially when it comes to trade.
All right, Al, back to you. I got one final question before we leave. Back to you, Al.
You know, on abortion, or excuse me, not abortion, we'll get to that later, but on the border, don't you have to blame Joe Biden for giving Democrats problems on that? Didn't he really, whether it was perception or reality, created the sense that Democrats are open border advocates, which I'm sure you're not, and most candidates aren't. But, you know, wasn't that a lot of the fault really lie with Joe Biden's administration?
I mean, look, both parties are responsible for not doing more in immigration reform and border security. We know that. I don't think that, you know, right now it's not about pointing fingers, but it's really about what action are we going to take to secure the border. As someone who spent, you know, a couple of tours in the Middle East, Iraq and Afghanistan, I mean, safety, national security is a top priority. And what I really want to see done in this next Congress when we take the House is we need immigration reform, and that needs to be a top priority.
Mm-hmm. Joe, did I miss your answer about what people think about RFK Jr. down there?
Oh, yeah, no. Look, I think that there are folks who, you know, are really passionate about certain things, to include vaccinations. They want to be able to make those decisions for themselves and their families, which is, I guess, you know, to some extent what freedom and liberty would mean. But I think it's a mixed bag right now. You know, for me personally, of course, you know, it's important to keep my kid healthy and keep myself healthy and making sure that we're not putting anybody else in harm's way. But I really do think that it's a mixed bag, and people just want the ability to make decisions for themselves and their kids.
I mentioned abortion a minute ago. Is that an issue this time? And I just not a related, but another social issue. Should transgender people be able to play in women's sports?
Well, those issues, you know, and especially abortion, we had a referendum on the ballot last year, the Arizona for Abortion Access, which passed, I think, with over 60% of the vote. It was definitely top of mind. And, you know, it still is with some folks. But I think right now, the top three, cost of living, families need relief, is healthcare. Families need access to affordable healthcare everywhere, not just in the city or the suburbs, and border security. So I have not heard a lot from the constituents and voters here about that issue. But I mean, it's top of mind for a lot of folks. And, you know, in terms of the transgender youth in sports, that's not for legislating. That's not something that Congress should make a decision on. That's something that parents should be talking to school officials about, ensuring that our kids are being safe. As a parent, I want to know what is happening in the school. And I think that we have to respect parents who have that concern.
Okay. Finally, Donald Trump carried your district, not by much, but carried your district last time. How would he do today? How would he do today if he were on the ballot?
He won this district by 0.7. And I will tell you, there is a conservative poll that just came out, I think a week or two ago, from, I think it was Ragnar Research. And it shows that we're up 3 points up on Siskamani. So if that's any indication on where things are trending, of course, it's so early and there's lots of work to do. So we're not going to take that for granted. But I would say right now, this administration's policies and Trump in general, people are not happy. I will tell you this, Al, in this state, this is a state of former Senator John McCain. We have two types of Republicans here. We have MAGA Republicans and we have McCain Republicans. And I have been very intentional about saying, if you believe in the rule of law, if you believe in upholding the Constitution, if you believe in this country and you want to see it progress and move forward and be, you know, a global leader like it once was, then you have a place on this team, and you're welcome. And we have had so many McCain Republicans come to our events, talk about how, you know, they're just so disappointed with the Republican Party. And last thing I'll say on this is that I have a star volunteer. His name is Gary. Gary is an Army veteran who voted for Trump in 2016. Gary collected several hundred signatures to get me on the ballot. And when I talked to him, I said, you know, what made you, you know, want to join the team and volunteer? He said he left the Republican Party after January 6th. That is something that we need to get back on the radar. We cannot let, accountability escape us there. So that needs to be brought up back into the public conversation, because that was really an insurrection. Anyways, he said he left the Republican Party after January 6th because he didn't recognize the Republican Party anymore. He became an independent. And now he's, volunteering on the campaign. But that's the kind of a person that we see joining our campaign outside of Democrats and independents.
Yeah, I was told that one of McCain's children is thinking of running for office as a Democrat because there's no place in the Republican Party. James Carville.
So before we go, Sergeant, take me back 60 years. Give me 15 seconds of cadence.
Oh, my God. It's been a long, long time. You want running cadence or marching cadence?
Marching cadence.
Oh, well, let's see if I can. I still have it. It's been 10 years. Tattooed. Tattooed. Forward. March. Left. Right. Left. Left. Right. Left. Right. Left. Hello. How's that? I still got it.
I can. And when you know what's funny? When you get good cadence, it just makes your mind.
You stretch.
You just know what you're doing. Thank you so much. I know you're going to win. I was going to help you on the show. What a great cadence call.
Thank you so much. Keep doing the amazing work. Stay sane and stay safe.
Joe Mendoza, we'll see you in Washington. Thank you very much.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Sleep cool and clean with Miracle. Well, it's great because, first of all, it is records everywhere. Well, know that. Well, know the reason, so we shouldn't be clever about it. And, get these sheets and get used to them because you're going to need them for more than a year, I promise you. And you're right. The biggest determinant, we talk about this all the time on this show, is how we feel the next day is almost directly proportional to the amount of sleep you got the night before. And this stuff is really helps you, really, really helps you sleep. In the summertime, but in the wintertime, even if you have the heater turned up, as I do sometimes, you like to have that mm-hmm. cool sheet against your body.
You know, if you wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable, take it from what James just said, it's time to upgrade. The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. That's why you need to switch to Miracle-Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology, and they use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep perfectly all night long. Sleeping at the right temperature is a critical way to feel rested the next day. And whether it's too hot or too cold, Miracle-Made sheets truly give you maximum comfort in any weather. They make pillowcases and comforters also. So thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle sheets require way less laundry days because they stay clean and fresh 3 times longer. Not only is that fewer wash cycles, but it's great for your skin. Hidden bacteria can clog your pores and cause acne. So sleep cleaner and clearer with Miracle. No more gross odors. Really makes life a whole lot better for your household. So join us in getting better sleep every night. Not only are Miracle-Made sheets smooth, breathable, and ridiculously comfortable, they don't have the steep price tag of other luxury brands. Miracle sheets feel nicer than bed sheets used by some five-star hotels. So it's a vacation when you get into bed. I, as I've told you, imagine myself somewhere in Italy, but it's your call. So drift off to dreamland and wake up at the perfect temperature every time you get into bed. Choose Miracle to upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/warroom to try Miracle-Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use promo code warroom, you'll get an extra 20% off plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/warroom with the code WARROOM at checkout. Thanks to we really do thank Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. So, and the link, by the way, is in our show notes. You know, we covered a lot of outrages in our chit-chat and earlier conversations, James. Instead, today I want to pay tribute to one of the great men of the last half century, Ted Turner, who died Wednesday after battling dementia for 7 or 8 years. He was amazing. He was a champion sailor, largest private landholder in the United States, raised bison, huge supporter for the United Nations, married Jane Fonda. Most famously, he created CNN, the cable news network, in 1980. It was treated as a joke by many, the Chicken Noodle Network. Ted Turner instead built CNN into a global powerhouse, and others followed. I was on an opinion panel there for more than 16 years, and my wife, I also did some interviews. My wife, Judy Woodruff, with the great Bernie Shaw, was their lead anchor for almost 11 years. What Ted Turner created was a strong news department with journalistic integrity, hiring people with journalistic credentials to run it. Tom Johnson, Gail Evans, Rick Kaplan. CNN, it appears, is likely to be acquired by the Ellisons, who earlier took over CBS, where they tapped an ideologue with little news reporting expertise to be its president, and they seem eager to please Donald Trump. My hope, likely to be dashed, is that the Ellisons, father and son, will take a look at Ted Turner's legacy and try to build that kind of legacy if they acquire CNN and keep that legacy. How fortunate that people, particularly like my wife, got to know a truly great man very well. I fear in our business, James, we may not see his like again. Thank you, Ted.
Yeah, what a giant and what a vision, and you know what CNN has become and what they did. If you think the Ellisons give one shit about Ted Turner's legacy and a legacy of journalism or information and news, and I'm sorry, but you're delusional. They're going to ruin that like they're going to ruin
it. I'm afraid you're right.
It doesn't take long. It's a matter. My outrage is not so much an outrageous observation, and we have got to get a lot better on life. So you hear this. The oligarchs are causing an affordability crisis, which is driving me into poverty. Okay, first of all, not oligarchs, fat cats, not affordability. I don't know where that fucking word came from. No one uses it. It's cost. Affordable is like a BMW, a price of eggs, a quart of milk, a loaf of bread. That's not you can't go and say, well, I'm not going to get a new BMW because it's unaffordable. You have to have that to eat. That's cost. All right. Uh-huh. The expensive items are affordability crisis, but cost is a really different thing. And as opposed to saying, and this is a word, as opposed to using poor and poverty, I urge Democratic messaging to say broke. And that comes from our friend Bobby Dillo, who makes a good point. Our people are not in poverty because that connotes that you're in a cycle or something, or that's a permanent state. If you broke, we've all been broke. That's a much more common experience for people. It's a better word. Words matter. And my fourth overall point is that this $1 billion is ballroom, and you've covered politics longer than anybody else, and you know sometimes it's the little examples that explode, and that it gives people context. And $1 billion for a ballroom that no one wants is something that you can use again and again as an illustration of how the parties of Washington are completely bass-ackled. So remember, hone in on your language, speak the language of people, and look for examples like the ballroom $1 billion to tell your story.
Good point.
Take control of your future with Trust and Will. Well, it's hard for me to tell you, but do you want the state to dispose of what you worked hard for your children, or do you want to do it yourself? Because if you die intestate, the legislature has come up with something how best to distribute your money. I would advise that you do this. You don't need a lot of assets. You just want to be sure that what you have gets to the right people, and you have control over it. And this is easy, affordable, and gives you real peace of mind, and lets you dictate where you want what you work so hard to acquire in your life.
Yeah. You know, James, we're not getting any younger. And with families that keep on growing, you want to make sure they're taken care of, no matter what. Whether you're 38 or 80, getting it out of the way will give you so much peace of mind. Unfortunately, a lot of people get overwhelmed by the thought of paperwork and decisions and keep putting it off or don't know where to start. That's why we had to tell our listeners when we saw that Trust and Will makes the process easy and affordable with pros standing by to help you at every step of the way. Trust and Will offers affordable, attorney-designed estate plans online that you can create in as little as 30 minutes. Their website makes it super easy to create your will or trust online, even for the tech-savvy like us, sort of. We're sort of tech savvy. It's fast, and in as little as 30 minutes, you can create a will that lets you document your wishes for guardians, asset distribution, and healthcare planning. Plus, they have attorney support available as an add-on to your plan, and Trust and Will products are state-specific and tailored to your needs. Update your plan at every life stage or transition with a platform that keeps everything organized, updated, and ready so your loved ones never face the burden alone. You can also share access with trusted contacts to ensure your will is carried out. And most importantly, it's secure. Trust and Will has bank-level encryption and secure sharing features so your most important documents and details stay protected and accessible. When we went through this with, you know, our young producer, he realized nobody better to go through this. He realized that now he's married, he finally had to get this done. Now he tells everyone how fast and simple it was. I hope you left everything to your wife. Trust and Will is the most trusted name on online estate planning with thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot. Trust and Will. Affordable estate plans and priceless peace of mind. Go to trustandwill.com/war room and get 20% off. That's trustandwill.com/war room to get your 20% off. trustandwill.com/war room. The link is in our show notes. Let's go to our listener questions. James, Kate in Montgomery, Alabama, this is something you know a lot about. How much of the Republican money raised for November elections will be controlled by Trump and his super PACs? And do you think he'll give any of his candidates in close races? I must say, I'm not sure it's right, more Democrats, I'm talking about a few, granted, worried about that huge pot of money that Trump has and pouring it in with really inflammatory and mean-spirited and probably deceitful ads the last month of the campaign. So pick up on that.
Yeah. What was the question? I lost it.
Well, the question is, you know, the big Republican money, Trump controls a lot. He's got, 300, so, 400 million. Is he going to pour it in at the end, will it make a difference?
Good question. I hear this a lot from Republicans, pretty high in Republicans, and I socialize with periodically, that Trump is just sucking up all the money. So the people at the different committees or that other things will tell you that all this money is coming and it's all going to Trump and he controls all of it. And this is to the detriment of a lot of fundraising of other entities of the Republican Party. I can assure you that I hear that quite often within the party. And you know, when you give him a dollar, he's going to control it, take it. The last thing he's going to do is like share it with anybody else in the Republican Party. And I can't say that I feel sorry for these Republicans. You have to vote for him. You have to pay homage to him, and he's going to take all the money from you. And you know, that's the way that life exists right now in the Republican Party.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, Steve in Burbank, California asked a question. It really picks on your up on your very good point about the ballroom and what a great issue that is. You know, they told us it was going to be funded by private donations. First of all, it's garish. It wrecks the whole appearance of the White House. It's a terrible idea, wasteful. But it was going to, don't worry, taxpayers. You're not going to cost you a cent. It's going to be funded by private donations. I guess those right-wing, rich Silicon Valley billionaires decide, you know, rather than money, and I get no return on that. How about if I put it in some of the crypto scams that Trump has created for us or some of the other things? So why not get the sucker taxpayers to pay for this? And that's exactly what it is. And they're riding on the excuse of security, which is total nonsense, James.
Of course it's nonsense. The whole thing, and just keep pummeling with this, and then, you know, and you're going to see other examples of this kind of waste. But again, sometimes to get people focused on the macro, you have to use the micro as an example. And for some reason, I love this example. And by the way, the public hates this thing. Public didn't like any of this,
right.
And we need to exploit it. And you know, when we talk about a veteran having delayed radiation or chemotherapy, or we talk about, you know, rural hospitals closing left to right, or we talk about dangers of fires, wildfires, forest fires, weather events, we got to remind people that funds have been diverted from these kinds of necessary functions of the government for a ballroom, which is totally garish and unnecessary.
Yeah, would make up for a lot of those Medicaid
right.
cuts, wouldn't it? Luke in Fall River, California, wants to know about Graham Plattner, who's running for the Senate in Maine. He's a working class. He seems authentic, Luke says. Who believes he speaks like a normal person. What are his chances against Susan Collins, James?
Good. And look, for whatever it is, I don't believe in residency requirements. I really don't believe, you know, that people have them. I don't think we have 100 voters in Maine know who Graham Plattner is. They know that he's had this controversial past. They know about it, and they don't give a shit. I think they want to elect this guy. I like Janet Mills. I was for her, but it just wasn't her time. And it's not Susan Collins' time. And yes, they're going to savage him, and they're going to use old quotes, and they're going to do this and go that. But people want something different, man. When they want to buy something different, they headlong going to buy it. And you know, the guy, he did have pretty consequential military career. And people just see him as, you know, like a lot of people, he says a lot of dumb things when he's young, but I like the fact that he's fresh and new and represents something different. I'm much less concerned about his ability to win a day now. Well, it was a month ago.
Mm-hmm. Aileen in Boston, Massachusetts, asked about Lisa Murkowski. Could she become a Democrat or an independent who caucuses with the Democrats if Petola, the former congresswoman, wins that Alaska Senate seat and the Senate is 50-50? You know, it's a good question, Aileen. I think Murkowski has a long family tradition of being in the Republican Party. Her father was a senator and governor. I think it would be very hard for her to become a Democrat, less hard to become an independent. She votes more like Angus King than she does like Tom Cotton. So if it's that close, it is possible. But if it's 50-50 or 51-49, don't forget John Fetterman. John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, a Republican who I think has he's an unusual guy, to put it nicely. And I think the Republicans think they have him. I don't know that they do, but they think that they have him and that he will switch if
so
necessary.
It ends up 51-49 Democratic. So the Republicans go to Fetterman. Says, first of all, you can't win a Democratic primary in Pennsylvania, which he could. I don't think Fetterman get 20%. Right. So what we'll do is we'll come out and be a Republican. We'll make you chairman of appropriations or whatever. I don't know. And you'll have a clear shot at reelection. And it'll be big news, and most importantly, Senator Fetterman, you're going to be on you're going to lead the 6 o'clock news tonight. You're going to be the lead on every website. You're really going to get your name in the paper. I think that's a real possibility. We need to get at least 52 Senate seats. But Senator Murkowski, sometimes people, I hear this a lot of Southern Democrats. You know, they want me. I'm just not a Republican, James. I'm sorry. I just don't want to do that. And I guess at the end of her day, she grew up and she's a certain way. Maybe she's just not a Democrat. But you're right, the independent option. But this might become fashionable. Look at Montana, possibly Idaho. Look at Nebraska. One of these new models are starting to emerge in American politics. Is people running as independent. And I have no, by the way, I would vote for Angus King 10 times if I could. And if independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats, he's a very thoughtful guy, and there's no reason that you couldn't. None.
Right. You know, I think that scenario that you drew about Fetterman is right on, a real possibility. The one thing I think, and I'm not sure he'll realize this, if all that happens, he is no shoe-in in a Republican primary in 28. There will be some right-wing Republican, like the guy who was a gubernatorial candidate last time, who said, you can't foist him on us and run in a primary and beat him.
Yeah, but Thune will say, we'll clear the field for you. Of course, he can't. But Fetterman wants. But
you can't,
Fetterman
right?
has a chance to get to that thing which he craves the most, and that is getting his name in the paper, getting his name on the internet. That's all that guy wakes up and thinks about. And I'm sorry. That's just who it is. And I'm happy that I tried to help Connell Lamb in the primary against him, but he is no chance in a Democratic primary. I can tell you that, but zero chance.
Right. James Robb from Rosemont, Pennsylvania, my growing up area, says, would it be a winning position for Democrats to run for affordability and against corruption and state unequivocally one of their first priorities would be to pass a national bill eliminating gerrymandering?
Well, can you do that?
Yeah, I mean, they can, you know, the Congress can set certain rules. States run elections, but, you know, the Congress was the one that lowered the voting age. And
I'm just asking.
Well, there's two questions. Can you do it? And would you be able to do it? And I think the latter is more of a problem.
There's two things I know you can do. You can expand the Supreme Court to 13 and you can admit Puerto Rico or D.C. I know you can do that. Or whether you can eliminate it or Bolito and say the states control it. They're very enamored with, you know, this political line drawing. I mean, that decision, I just don't see how anybody can look at that court and call it legitimate. I mean, look at the court and say, you got to follow what they say. But I don't think there's from every reason to how they got there, to Bush v. Gore, to you name it. And when you have Supreme Court justices with a straight face, I guess a straight face, they write the opinion, they read it out loud, that racism is a thing of the past. Man, what fucking country you live in? Do you think that racism in anywhere in this country, but when you think racism is dead in Louisiana? please.
Yeah. James Andrew in Jacksonville, Florida, notes that DNC Chairman Martin, when he was elected, he was going to release a 2024 autopsy of what happened in that election. He has since reneged on that promise And Andrew says, how could the DNC expect voters to trust him if they come off as weak and clandestine? I, first of all, think it should be released. You know, why have an autopsy if you're not going to release it? Why keep it inside? I think probably part of the reason is because if it's an honest autopsy, casts a lot of blame on Biden, some on Harris. But I got to tell you, I don't think it matters a whole lot. There are other things that will, you know, be much more important than that. And so, yeah, I'd release it, but, you know, it's not something I'm going to worry a whole lot about.
I'm a little bit different here. I must say that this comes up a lot in fundraising. All right. But people ask about Martin, they ask about this. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a disaster. So we had it, you know, when an airplane crashes, the last thing anybody says, let's not look back. Let's just look forward. No, why did the goddamn thing crash?
I agree with you on the substance, no question.
The reality of the situation is this. From Labor Day to Election Day, the Harris campaign spent $2 billion fucking dollars. $2 billion. And we didn't get a single vote on Election Day. We weren't already going to get on Labor Day. Why would we not want to? It doesn't have to be personal. Where did that money go? How was it spent? What was effective? What was not effective? Get it out there. Political science can help you answer some of these questions. But the idea that we did this, and it's necessary, and we have to find out what went wrong, why it went wrong, that you paid for it, and now you're sitting on it. It makes no fucking sense. None. And I don't have anything. I find him to be personally an affable man. He's being run by a pack of idiots. I don't know of any justification for not telling the political community, the donors. Do you think these donors are I know Ken Martin knows this because he goes around raising money for the party. You think they're happy? Because I can tell you they're not. Because I see a lot of the same people you see.
Somebody over the DNC leaked that baby.
And I'm not gonna ask that. There's a good chance there's some good information in there. You know, I was at 80 years old, I was naive enough to think that, well, I thought the race was tied and we had more door knockers and storefront headquarters and, you know, canvases and callers. And I always thought that was good for, you know, people would tell me what my end of the business, but they would claim it was good for a good point and a half. It wasn't good for shit. So what does it tell?
Yeah, you and I both saw that. We were at Harvard the weekend before the election, and we both thought more likely than not Harris is going
to
win.
I wanted to arrive at that conclusion. So
our reasoning was
at the time, it was erroneous. And the answer to that lies in this freaking autopsy that's been paid for and you're sitting on it because you might hurt somebody's feelings. You're supposed to have your feelings hurt when you lose. You're supposed to feel bad about it. You're not supposed to like it. You're not supposed to cover it up. And it is not the end of your life if you made mistakes, but tell people about them. This thing just winds me up to no end. I'm gonna be on this shit like gravy on rice because it's just too stupid for words.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad we brought it up. That's good, James. I got a tough one for you at the end. Your namesake James in New York City says, "Give him a list of top five Democratic congressional candidates most in need of donations." Doesn't have to be exact list of five, but can you list a few?
I could, but you'd have to say the honorable incumbent, a possible challenger. This is what I am doing myself, and what American Bridge, the organization I work for, doing. We're starting to focus on districts, and you can find this out. Just go Cook Partisan Voter Index by congressional district. We're focusing on R+5. To R+12. So what I would tell a donor is decide, you know, where you want to put your resources. Do you want it in an incumbent who might lose? And a lot of Democratic incumbents are going to lose, but it certainly are some in districts that Trump carried. Or is it a Democratic, like you know, we spoke to, and Trump carried it by 0.7. You have to have your appetite for how much you're willing to spend. But I would do, and I always think that donors should do research themselves. And if you send somebody $250 and that's a big donation for you, then follow the race, get involved in it, follow it on the computer, go to the local stations. Right. But you got to pick what kind of candidate you want to donate to. And also, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, and they distribute it right to the campaigns. I mean, right, you have some overhead, but you have overhead in anything.
Right. Those questions. I'm sorry we didn't get to all of them, but send them in again next week. And don't forget to tell us where you're from. But this is one of our very, very favorite parts of doing this podcast. So thank you.
I'm glad the autopsy thing came up. That just pisses me. It's stupid. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Quince, Miracle Made, and Trust in Will, in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them, because when you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.